There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And welcome to FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. This is Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan. Taking some time away, you can hear me up in Huntsville. I'm a host up there, 2 to 5 p.m. WVNN if you're ever in the area. Also, regularly contributor on Yellhammer News, and you can read me every week at lanyapmobile.com. And, of course, I am a Breitbart editor, so I'm a man of many hats. But it's always a pleasure to fill in for Sullivan as a... I get to talk to the folks at Mobile for an hour. We got a big show planned for you today. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to State Representative Brett Easterbrook. Represents Washington County, I think parts of Choctaw County. Maybe gets that into Mobile but County. But how many of y'all travel to Tuscaloosa on a regular basis? And if you've ever go to the, you know, there's several ways you can go. You go up Highway 43. But a lot of people here in the last 10, 15 years have been going up U.S. Highway 45. Why? And you go through Mississippi, and you go up to Meridian or near Meridian, and you hit the interstate, and you go straight into Tuscaloosa. You come into Tuscaloosa from the west. Well, 45 is four-lane from the Mississippi state line all the way into Meridian. But what about that portion of Highway 45 that goes from Mobile to the Mississippi state line? There's a stretch or two here and there that's four-lane, I think going through Citronelle. But it's one of the more dangerous roads in Alabama, and the locals have been pleading with state officials ever since I was a child to widen U.S. 45, and they still haven't yet. But when we get to that Mississippi state line, it's like the parting of the Red Sea. Everything just sort of gets out of the way, and it's wide open four-lane highway all the way. I think it goes all the way to Tennessee state line up 45, four lanes. Why not in Alabama? So Representative Easterbrook will be with us. That's at the bottom of the hour. Big news on the U.S. Senate race front. Need to talk about that. I've started hearing this last week, and Caitlin Collins of CNN has since been hearing the same thing. I think our friend Bob Grip, formerly a Fox affiliate here at Mobile, Donald Trump's coming back to Ladd People Stadium. This will be the third time, guys. You know, obviously, it all kind of started in 2015 at Ladd People Stadium almost 5 years ago. But this time, a little different. Jeff Sessions, not the subject of Trump's support. It's Tommy Tuberville. I can tell you something, folks. This is a fascinating thing going on in the Senate race right now. And we kind of saw this coming, but All the action seems to be Mobile Baldwin County's first congressional district, where Bradley Byrne dominated. I mean, he dominated by a lot, but still finished third. And that is, everything in the first congressional district and Conecuh County was won by Bradley Byrne. So this votes are up for grabs. And if you haven't noticed, I watch these things because I'm all over the state, but both Jeff Sessions and Tommy Tuberville have spent a lot of time in the two coastal counties in Baldwin and Mobile counties. But Jeff Sessions, he's struggling. I mean, he's behind. And even his own internal polling says they're 6 points out. There was a signal poll early May, 23-point margin for Tuberville. I think that might be a bit of an outlier. The race is probably a lot closer than that. But I wouldn't surprise it to be in double digits for Tuberville. And I guess the question is, Trump comes to Ladd People's, does that work Trump's advantage you find residents of Mobile Baldwin County. So you get a lot of attention, a lot of media. But that is symbolic in a way, because if you remember 2015, Sessions did not endorse Donald Trump for the presidency until a rally later in 2016, right before the Alabama primary. I think it was March. It was in Madison, at the stadium there in Madison, North Alabama. But he did go up on stage in 2015 with Trump and wore the Make America Great Again hat. And you know, the pictures, all of that was sort of a, even though it wasn't a formal endorsement, it was sort of an informal endorsement. It was a big deal, because no one was taking Donald Trump seriously at the time. I had talked to a guy, I think with the University of Virginia Center for Responsive Politics, say at the time very reputable political watcher, predictor, prognosticator. It was Larry Sabato's outlet. And the big lead up to this, there was some speculation Donald Trump would not even be on the ballot in all 50 states. This was nothing but a vanity run. He would flame out. And he never flamed out. And Sessions' appearance there was a ton of media there. Probably not as much as there was later on in the campaign for Trump. It was still looking like, well, Jeb is going to probably come out and win this thing or whatever. But the way it turned out, though, guys, Trump goes on to be president of the United States. He comes to Mobile one more time, if you recall, right after he won the 16 election. Did a pre-Christmas rally there, Ladd Peoples. This will be the third trip to Ladd Peoples Stadium for the president of the United States. And if there's any place I think Tuberville really needs help, if you base it on the March 3rd primary results, it is in Mobile County. It's in Baldwin County. It's in the Mobile media market. And you get this added bonus. You always talk about the media markets in Alabama. 40% of the Republican electorate is probably in that Birmingham media market. Mobile's tough, and candidates don't want to spend a lot of energy and resources on Mobile and media, because you share a media market with Pensacola, which is Florida. I think a county or two in Mississippi. But if Florida's a swing state, and you're getting all the news in Florida as well, it's kind of a double whammy of some sorts, because we're told Florida's a swing state. I don't know that I necessarily believe it. I still think it's Republican. I think DeSantis proved that in 18. Rick Scott proved it in 18. But you get the bonus of coming to Mobile and getting a few of those counties, Okaloosa, Santa Rosa, Escambia counties, in Florida. So there's a lot of reasons Mobile are, you know, as Trump has done. He's had a lot of rallies in Pensacola as well. There's good reason you could get a little twofer there, given the media markets and the state lines. But it's a fascinating thing to come, the symbolism and all of that coming back to Mobile, where Sessions first stood for Trump to come campaign for his opponent, Tuberville. You got to think that one doesn't sting just a little bit. And it sounds like it's tough. Sessions did respond real quick before we go to break here. The people of Alabama will not be told who to vote for by anyone in Washington. As recent experience demonstrates, in Alabama, we make our own decisions on who will represent us in the United States Senate. It's always a good day when the President of the United States visits Alabama. He goes on to say, I said Alabama will vote solely for real Donald Trump. It's false, so his time would be better spent in swing states. He must win to be reelected. All right, we're going to take a timeout. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on this Monday afternoon. Still to come, bottom of the hour, here in just the next segment, we'll hear from State Representative Brent Easterbrook. We're going to talk a little about highways. So we'll get in some questions about COVID-19. That is still apparently a threat. despite all the protests and mass gatherings you see out in the streets. Speaking of mass gatherings, I'll tell you what, I went to the, was it Fairhope on Saturday night. I don't know how many of you listening out there were as well, but I had an opportunity to take in the Alan Jackson concert. Theory, I can see how the social distancing and the application of what they were trying to do there, it was intended to work, but it didn't really. Let's just say that it wasn't the social distancing guidelines at play there. Not to really rat anybody out or anything, but it just felt like the world was back to normal, and that was fine with me. Wasn't in anybody's personal space except maybe my wife's, but other than that, it felt like things were back to normal. Like, you know, you're at the old Bayfest or down at the beach or something like that. I did notice a lot of B-roll today on MSNBC. They are taking shots in Mobile and in Orange Beach, going down Dolphin Street there, and showing that is how people aren't taking these social distancing rules seriously enough. Strangely, they're not talking about the protest as it pertains to COVID-19. Also in the news, if you have not heard, the Mayor Mobile Stimson is Sandy Stimson is going to move the Admiral Sims Raphael Sims statue to the History Museum here in Mobile, History Museum of Mobile, permanently. And we are expected to hear from the Attorney General Steve Marshall later today. I suspect it will be $25,000 fine. I gotta be honest with you guys, this Alabama Memorial Preservation Act passed in 2017, it doesn't seem like it's got a whole lot of teeth. $25,000, maybe for some places, some municipalities is a lot, but most of your bigger cities, And how hard would it be for a George Soros type organization or something to raise the money to have these taken down to be in compliance with the law? The only thing I would say, in Mobile and Birmingham, it was kind of done through executive fiat. The mayors, Bo Stimson and Randall Woodfin in Birmingham, decided they were going to take this into their own hands and do it. Up at Huntsville, where I broadcast, there is also one of these Confederate monuments. And the way they went about it, it's on the property of the Madison County Courthouse, which puts it in more of a county jurisdiction, let's say. Inside the city of Huntsville, obviously. But it was a place of turmoil. And the way they did it, though, I thought is the way it ought to be done. They met, the county commission met up there, and they voted to remove it and pay the fee, or the fine, or whatever you want to call it. And there was a democratic process in place. And now, you know, I suppose similarly, you could make that case that Stimson and Randall Woodfin are acting at the behest of the voters. I mean, the elections have consequences, and they can act accordingly based on what they think is right or wrong. And that's fine argument to make, but it just feels more reasonable, and it feels like the legislative branch, if you will, has more skin in the game if they vote. Are you telling me that the Birmingham City Council or the Mobile City Council would not have voted to have done something with the Sims statue if they had done it that way? I know time was of the essence, but we should never give in to mob rule. And that's the perception. Stimson gave in to the mob. Randall Woodfin gave it to the mob. Perhaps these guys up in Huntsville are giving in to the mob as well, but at least there's a vote, there's a public hearing, there's people talking about it. If you oppose it, you could go protest. If you oppose the removal, I you don't hear much out of these people, but I got to think they're out there that didn't want to see the statue come down. Did they have their opportunity to make a case why it should not be taken down? Or is it your elected official does better than you? We're just going to act. We think it's in the best interest of the city and the city's safety because we have a mob out there that might go graffiti, might go crazy, might loot, riot, whatever. Let me know what you think. 251-343-0106. But I don't think this is a good precedent, guys. at all. And it could have been done a little differently. They could have set up some kind of security detail to protect it if it was that much of a threat, or they could have done, even if Mayor Stimson had boxed it up like they did in Birmingham or done something, I think it would have been better than just the removal and acting on his own without the input of either the city council or either the or not given public input. But it's all said and done. That looks like the way it's going to go. My prediction is it all was resolved, $25,000 fee, and then we move on. There is some speculation when the legislature reconvenes in 2021, they might revisit this. Gerald Allen, he's a state senator from Tuscaloosa that originally sponsored this bill, and it was signed into law by Kay Ivey. There, in this last session, Allen was going to do more to it, or he had proposed to do more to it, to bolster it, to give it more teeth. I don't think there's an appetite for it anymore, guys. I mean, the Alabama legislature being what it is, we saw the national headlines it made with the abortion ban last year. If the Alabama legislature decides to take up more stringent penalties for the Alabama Memorial Preservation Act, I think it would be a national story. I think you would have rioting in the city of Montgomery. I think you would have agitators, outside agitators, stirring the pot. And it would be, it just doesn't seem like there's going to be the political will to revisit this in the future. We're kind of dealing with what I think we're going to be dealing with throughout this. Now, there's a different approach to this. And I've always said this about these monuments. They're not even worth that much fighting for on public property. We're talking about Gone with the Wind and things on private property. Totally different story. Where they tried to eradicate private property and the display of the Confederate flag. That's a total different subject. But if we're going to fight, if this is what the Republican Party in 2020 thinks is a priority, I don't think they do, and that's why they're not taking an upfront position in taking this head on. It's just, what good does it do? Let the Democrats have it. Let them have these symbolic victories. Let the left have it. If monuments going down is where they want to expend political capital and resources, fighting memorials in the South, it seems like a waste of time to me. But is it the biggest battle? Is it the most important thing? I wrote this for Lightning App. You can still get it on the stands. But this was my take on it. It was, you know, the right fault for the Confederate flag, I guess, starting in the 80s, coming out of the George Wallace Democratic Party era there. It didn't really have much success other than, you know, there was, you know, a court victory here or two, you know, but that was it. But the left has taken up this cause, and they're going to get statues taken down. And how does that change policy for the better? How does that improve anybody's lives? How does that improve their lives? They can pat themselves on the back on the left if they want over this. But that's what it looks like to me. And I think there's just not the political will from the other side to take this fight on. But the iconic Admiral Raphael Sims statue going to a museum. You look at all these old photos of Mobile, and you look at them after World War II, and you think of all these moments in history. There's that statue. It's seen a lot. But now it's going away. So, you know, public property, it is what it is. I suppose this was something that was coming inevitably. But the fight just doesn't seem like the will to fight it right now, at least politically, as far as I can tell. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's the read on it. You know, I've seen a lot of op-eds published fighting for this. A few of my callers up in Huntsville have expressed their frustration with the situation, that they say, give an inch now, do you give a mile later on? And that's fair, but if we poll the public right now in Alabama, any of the 67 counties, what do you think they would say about Confederate displays on public property? And the will, maybe at one time it was overwhelmingly for, it was way overwhelmingly for keeping them, but I think that that mood has shifted. And I don't know that there is a constituency out there that's willing to fight tooth and nail for this. But we're going to keep an eye on it. All right, folks, we're going to take a timeout. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
And welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. This is Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan on this Monday afternoon. Hope everyone had a great weekend. We're efforting State Representative Brett Easterbrook. I'm going to hear from him hopefully before the end of the show, before the end of the hour. If all goes well, so we'll give that another try here. But right now, we're standby. Dalton, the legendary, speaking of legends, Dalton Orwig holding down the fort back at the studio. Dalton, how's I got some text you got for us?
Yeah, and nowhere near legendary, but I appreciate it, Jeff. And you're quickly skyrocketing to fame. Obviously, you've got so many good hours of radio and breaking news that you've had over the last couple of years. But a few texts regarding both of the stories you've been talking about today regarding the possible Trump rally coming back to Latin peoples on behalf of Tommy Tuberville, but also on the removal of the Admiral Sim statue and moving it to the History Museum of Mobile. And first text up here, David says, as a historian, I have no issue with the statue being in the museum. I just hope that the mayor does not take the $25,000 fine out of the budget for the History Museum. I think because he solely made the decision on his own with no consultation, that the money should come out of his department's budget. So that's one text regarding the moval, moving of the Admiral Sim statue. Also another one from Tim here. He says, exactly, Jeff, agreeing with you. He said, the mayor couldn't even notify the council. No wonder they were in a lawsuit. Also, last week it was unclear who the statue actually belonged to. The Sons of Confederate Veterans were working to figure that out. So a text from Tim and a text from David there regarding the moving of statue, the Admiral Sim statue.
Well, how about that? Dalton, we got Representative Easterbrook here on the line. Such as live radio goes, he joins us now. We're going to break in for that real quick and get this, then we'll get back to some of those texts. Representative Jeff Poore, FM Talk 106.5, how are you this afternoon? Go right ahead, sir.
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for making time for us today. We're on the air now. We're on the air now. But I asked you on, obviously we want to talk about roads in just a moment here on Highway 45, but let me ask you something real quick. COVID-19, everything in your district, can you give us a rundown about, kind of the way your folks are handling it up in Washington County? Hello?
In Washington County, is back to this state, we're beginning to, we're not exploding like your more metropolitan areas, but our numbers are increasing, and part of that we expect as we open the state up and business return a higher infection rate, but we have to open the state up, in my opinion, and learn to live with it. It's here.
Well,
we have to face it and we have to deal with it.
I think you're not alone in expressing that. We've got a little bit of a struggle with the connection here, but we're going to try to work through it. The reason I ask you on, ever since I was a child, 45 from Mobile to the Mississippi state line, it's been a two-lane road, and the state has never come around to fixing that. It looks like they're finally coming around on Highway 98 in a similar situation. But you went on Capital Journal 6 months ago or so, raised this to the chagrin of the ALDOT director, John Cooper. But I wanted to hear from you about this and the listeners. I think it's something more of a local issue to talk about. Have you gotten any feedback from the Alabama Department of Transportation or anything about this?
Very little. There's been no movement that I can see. We're fixing to start pushing, but the COVID is kind of not the whole topic of discussion right now. So we have to push for this. That's it. If you look up in my district, which is Washington, Choctaw, and Clark County, and Highway 45 comes, there's as far as improvements to the highways. Since Joe Crocodile was speaker of the House, and we're that's president 50 years ago. It's when this rig got full of lane up to Thomasville. As soon as Joe McCorkadale was gone, it stopped there and never was over.
Right.
They're suffering, and they're suffering big, and a lot of it is because of the transportation spending.
It seems like, though, you get pushback from Aldott. If you even raise these questions, like, and 43, like you said, Thomasville, four lanes there, and then it's just kind of a two-lane frontier beyond that, and so many people take 45 to go to Tuscaloosa, where that would be a natural path up to Tuscaloosa. But now you're using 45, except for that portion there that gets from the state line down to Mobile. But it seems to me by now, given the threat of hurricanes and the potential need to evacuate people from the coast, that this should have long ago been done.
Absolutely. Highway 45 is four lanes from the Mississippi state line to Chicago, Illinois. You bring all that traffic down a two-lane road trying to get to the rest of the way. I travel it every day. I live on it. It is very dangerous. People are jammed all of a sudden when they get to that bottleneck, and they make poor decisions. And it's a natural hurricane evacuation route. And it should have been the money used for to expand Highway 45 from the state line. It's no question about it. I don't understand it. You can only attribute it to votes. There's not a lot of votes in this area, so it's never been a priority. Even in the law that was passed recently, counties without four-lane access the interstate highway system was supposed to take priority. That is Washington County, Clark County, and basically it's Clark County. In Clark County, also, or Washington County, the only access you have is only if you want to go south. Well,
and
not everybody wants to go south. Sometimes you need to go north, sometimes you need to go east, sometimes you need to go west.
Well,
with the law stating that clearly.
I mean, most of the state's population is to the north.
We still have no movement.
Most of the state's population is to the north, and it seems like there ought to be a north-south thoroughfare, but I don't know. It's historically, it seems very strange that is, you know, we talk about the underserved areas of the state when it comes to rural broadband, or when we talk to anything, especially, you know, getting up into Black Belt and making it more prosperous and economically viable. But the infrastructure there is just, it's miserable in a lot of places.
Why is not economically viable? If you start talking about this area or the Black Belt, if you start talking about industry and jobs, it's going to be heavy industry. We're not going to bring in a tech company. They're not locating in these rural areas. It's going to be industry. And industry can find plenty of places to locate in rural areas around the country that has four-lane access. Until we have it, we're going to struggle in the rural areas. It's common sense. Go to any industry and talk to them. What's one of their main priorities? And it's transportation. We have the Tom Bigby River. If we had four-lane access to that Tom Bigby River, industry ought to be booming up and down that Tom Bigby River. But it's not until you get out of Alabama. When you get out of Alabama, where they have the four-lane access to the Tom Bigby, you see the explosion in the industry.
Well,
we never took advantage of the Tom Bigby waterway.
Right. When I was a kid, and we'll wrap it up on this, when I was a child, I remember when the Ted Tom Waterway was completed, there was a big celebration in Mobile. Some of the listeners may remember a fireworks show. It was a historic occasion. It doesn't seem like it's really lived up to that billing of being what it was. And you think it's because there's just no way to there's no way to get to it. That stuff could build along it, but there's no roads or not a good roads, including, you know, four-laning some of these highways to make that even viable.
The Tom Bigby Waterway has more than lived up to its expectations. That's why you have an expand the Port of Mobile, because of the industry coming up and down, the traffic coming up and down the Tom Bigby route, which is everywhere. The only place that did not take advantage of it was Alabama.
So,
if you, wherever you'll see barges all the time. And industry requires two things. For most heavy industries, they require waterway, they require full lane access. Not all materials come in and out on the water, or rail, or on the highway. They all three. Places can offer all three. We easily could. We'd all we need is the four lane access. Highway 84 should be four lane from the I-65. Once you get to the Mississippi line,
it's four lane.
It's four lane as far west as you would like to drive.
Hey, Representative, we got to leave it there. We're up against a break here, but we need to do this, have this conversation again sometime. Hopefully, we can line it up where we can talk more about it. But I do want to thank you for your time.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Struggling with the connection there, but I think you got the gist of it. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back to Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan here on FM Talk 106.5. Sean, take a little time away, but luckily I have Dalton Orwig there at the control center holding my hand, making sure that I don't go too awry here. Dalton, before we hear from Representative Easterbrook, who has apologized to the listening audience, he said the tower near his home had gone out and he had to go find a cell tower that was operating where he had a signal, and it just time ran out on us. But I still think it's an important thing to talk about. But nonetheless, he sends his apologies. We had some texts you were reading.
Yeah, and personally, being a Grove Hill boy from the woods of Clark County, I totally understand the cell phone connection there for the representative. He had that Highway 43 cell connection, so I think we can give him a pass this time. But
sounds like a country song, that Highway 43 cell connection.
Regarding you know, the two issues that you brought up at the beginning of the hour, we got several texts, and the main thing today that we've been talking about, and that's the city of Mobile moving that Admiral Raphael Sims statue from downtown Mobile, and the mayor announcing yesterday that they will be moving it into the History Museum of Mobile for the future. And that's actually a poll question on our website right now on fmtalk1065.com. But a couple texts for that. David said, as a historian, I have no issue with the statue being in the museum. I just hope that the mayor does not take the $25,000 fine out of the budget for the History Museum. I think because he solely made the decision on his own with no consultation, I think the money should come out of his department's budget. And then another text here from Tim. He said the mayor couldn't even notify the council. No wonder they were in a lawsuit. Also, last week it was unclear who that statue actually belonged to. Tim added the Sons of Confederate Veterans were working to figure that out. So a couple texts there regarding the moving of the Admiral Sims statue.
Interesting. These statues, it seems like, in a lot of places. Now, I've been to all 67 counties in Alabama, and I'd say about two-thirds of them, the courthouses, are in the town square, which is nearby the courthouse, have some kind of Confederate monument, be it a statue or something carved in stone that signifies service, you know, and it dates back to the early part of the 20th century. And you know, there's all kinds of theories as to why this was the phenomenon. I've heard one is, you know, 50 years, a sort of a signature milestone to get past the Civil War. The economic depression of the time didn't allow for these monuments to go up in the 1800s. It wasn't until the early 1900s. Still, a lot of cities and governments could afford to do this. A lot of these civic groups. And you hear people about, you know, it's the lost cause. It's just revisionism and wanted to glorify that era for political purposes. But whatever the reason is, they started showing up in the early 1900s. And I got to be honest, like, most of them aren't, you know, works of, like, great architecture or art or anything. They're, like, in the corner of a courthouse lawn, just kind of sitting over there. It looks like, you know, every now and then they'll weed eat around them. And I wonder just, like, why is this such an important thing to dominate our political discussions? Now, the Raphael Sims one, I think, is much different just because it does have a legacy. But where I'm at up in Madison County and in Lynn Park in Birmingham, and then I assume there's got to be others that we'll hear about over time, it just seems like such a tedious thing to spend a lot of time on. I don't know, but it is apparently the most important thing right now for a lot of people. And to be honest with you guys, the left's winning this one. They want to tear down these structures. That seems to be where the energy is at, and there doesn't seem to be the political will on the other side. If there is, I haven't heard from anybody saying, you know, I want to fight this. But I think public property is a totally different thing. We've kind of gotten past that. Then private property. I don't like this trend that we got to shame people or whatever it is when it comes to, you know, if you listen to a certain country artist, or if you're a country music artist, that is, or if you, for whatever reason, want to fly the Confederate flag on your own property, or if, you know, whatever the reason, gone with the wind, that we're trying to do away with some of that. But I would say the most peculiar thing of all of this, and this is going to be tough, and I saw an AL.com story. I know we got just a few minutes here before we have to end it all here, but taking George Wallace names off of buildings and statues and the Wallace Tunnel, for example, is an AL.com story. There's a movement underway at Auburn University to have George Wallace removed from some of the buildings there. Guys, the George Wallace at the very end was not the same George Wallace that for some is a romanticized target of demagoguery by the left, I think. I think he was totally different. When a lot of these names went on these buildings, he was just a guy that allocated funding and I think got credit for it. And you can't go many places in the state of Alabama where George Wallace's thumbprint isn't on some part of it. The community college system, the prison system, a lot of roads in Alabama, Talladega Super Speedway. The only reason it's not in Spartanburg, South Carolina is because of George Corley Wallace. It's going to be a tough thing to decouple Alabama and George Wallace. And we could point to what he did, but he apologized for it. He apologized for it on a number of occasions. It's well documented that he apologized for it. It is kind of startling to see the state of the schoolhouse door on video and hear segregation now, segregation forever, whatever. I mean, that is, you know, that is played up and it's a part of the history, but that toward the end there, guys, with George Wallace, I think he was very repentant. He was asking for forgiveness. So that it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, but I do think there's a movement afoot to take George Wallace off everything. All right, folks, I got to get out of here. As always, I want to thank the great Sean Sullivan for letting me guest host. This is FM Talk 106.5.